Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
It is absolutely necessary that we all get together. We work together. We respect each other. We like and love each other.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I'm getting tired of people running from me in the ring. Mike Tyson, Holyfield, you a bunch of bums. Stand up and be a man and fight a real fighter.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million-dollar Sports Pylon Studios in San Francisco. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Often imitated, but never duplicated. 37, make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. When I say modest, think caps. Straight up, I'm a four-time Golden Glove champion, so I can fight a little bit, or I used to. And I'm an award-winning boxing writer. So supposedly, allegedly, I know a little bit about boxing. But guess what? The average fan, I've always found out, has a different insight. So they have a different perspective. I open up the toll-free at the top of each hour just for you fans. 1-800-878-7529. The listener line right here in the Sports Byline Studios. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. Text me here in the studio. That number, the text line, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. The studio text line. Well, we're talking Godzilla and King Kong. Of course, they fought last night. King Kong won. I'm talking about Luis Ortiz beating Charles Martin. It was a battle of heavyweights, sort of like over-the-hill heavyweights, but per se, it was on pay-per-view. But I'm going to go into depth this hour on Alexis Arguello. Why am I going to do that? Because he died in 2009 under some suspicious circumstances, and people keep pressing me. What happened? What happened? What happened? Well, I've got a different perspective. We'll talk about that more after the break. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio. And if you're watching me on Tuesday, this is Vive TV, baby.
Ma'am, that's a groove.
Ain't nothing I can say.
I saw my buddy Lenny Williams, who's singing the song right here with Tower of Power. I saw him with Jay Prince and a bunch of boxing people on his Facebook page. So evidently, Lenny's delving back into the world of boxing. More power to him. Of course, a guy that fought amateur. Remember what he told me? He goes, I never realized what it was like to get your bell rung until somebody hit me on the chin. Yeah, somebody hit him on the chin boxing. He learned. Anyway, bottom line is, great singer, great family man, great husband, great father. No doubt about that. Great community guy. He did his Christmas thing. Every Christmas, he does something in Oakland, California, raise money for a couple of charitable organizations. He did it again this year. More power to him. Lenny Williams. Check him out at LennyWilliams.com. Alexis Arguello, born April 19th, 1952, died July 1st, 2009. Let's talk about his career. Of course, he wasn't the greatest fighter at the beginning. He lost two fights in a row. In fact, he got knocked out by a guy that was making his pro debut back in 1969. Omar Anaya knocked him out. Omar never went on to do anything that was really good. But the bottom line is, it was a first-round TKO loss for Alexis Arguello. I mean, he was like blown away by it. They said it was a KO in four, but somebody said it was a stoppage in one. Anyway, he lost his next fight after that, a split decision in six rounds, but he would go on a bit of a tear. Of course, I'm talking about El Flaco Explosivo, the explosive thin man. Of course, Alexis Arguello was a master boxer, but he wouldn't lose again until 1972. He lost it to a guy by the name of, he lost to some nondescript guys. Jorge Reyes, who was 7-6, he lost him in TKO in eight rounds. That was down there in Managua, Nicaragua. So he went on a hell of a roll then. Then he lost to the future, the kicked back, the world champion at one point in time, World Boxing Association featherweight champion from Panama, Ernesto Marcel. Of course, Marcel, a great fighter, no doubt about that. But he beat Arguello the first time around. Arguello wins another 10 fights, 15 fights, maybe almost 20 fights. Comes up against Villamar Fernandez. No relation to me, but Villamar could fight. Villamar was a Villamar couldn't punch, but Villamar just was difficult, man. Villamar was a pain in the ass to fight. Anyway, he had some problems with him, Alexis did, and lost a decision to him without a doubt. That was a one decision. Of course, he went on to beat guys like Ruben Castillo, Rolando Navarrete, Cornelius Boz Edwards, Jose Luis Ramirez, Jim Watt. Of course, he beat Jim Watt for the WBC lightweight title this afternoon, holding the 126-pound championship, featherweight championship, and then the 130-pound championship. Of course, at 130 pounds, he destroyed Alfredo Escalera. Wow, he went over there. He destroyed the snake man. Just destroyed him. I mean, Escalera was considered one of the better fighters pound for pound in boxing, but he got destroyed that night by Alexis Arguello. Of course, after the Watt fight, Alexis had the emotional encounter with Ray Boom Boom Mancini. Of course, his father, Lenny Mancini, was ringside, and Lenny had fought in World War II, and I think the war cut his career short, something like that. And then they had another brother. I think it was Lenny. I think his name was Lenny, too, but he was better than Ray. Ray wasn't the better of the two brothers. Anyway, Ray Mancini, I think, lost in 14 rounds. Arguello, a bit charitable, and carried him for a few rounds. I think he could have punished him and put him out a little bit early, but he had respect for the father, respect for Ray Mancini, and Arguello showed a whole lot of class that night, no doubt about that. And, of course, next up, he takes on Roberto Elizondo, who's a tough guy out of Texas. No big thing there, 23-1. Beats James Buscemi the next time out. And then I go down to see him in Las Vegas. It's 1982. May 22nd, 1982, I take this girl down to Las Vegas, Maria Ramirez. Her and I go to Vegas, and I'm going to see Andy Gannigan challenge Arguello for the lightweight championship. Now, Andy Gannigan is this Filipino guy. He's a left-hander, but he can punch. I mean, I think Ring Magazine rates him as one of the top 50 punchers of all time, something like that. Pound for pound, the guy could just punch, okay? So I'm sitting in the first row, and this is supposed to be like a walk-around bout for Arguello. And everybody thinks he's going to walk through Gannigan without any problems, right? In the second round, boom, Arguello is laying right in front of me. I'm like freaking out, man. I can't believe it. Holy, I'm at the Aladdin Hotel, the old Aladdin Hotel in Vegas. Like, whoa, what is going on? And what WTH? Whoa, because he's laying right in front of me. And I said to myself, he is hurt. Alexis is hurt. So he gets up, he gets cracked with his southpaw by the southpaw Gannigan. He gets up and he makes it through the second round. I say to myself, man, I didn't come down here. I didn't think it was going to be a title change, especially with Gannigan. I think Gannigan was going to beat the great Alexis Arguello. In the third round, he hit Arguello again, even harder. He hit Arguello so hard in the third round, Arguello told me he had a buzz until the next morning. That's how hard Andy Gannigan hit. Of course, he got hurt in that round. He didn't get knocked down, but he got hurt in that round. He would come back and he would stop Gannigan late in the fight. But, you know, that was a sign of what was coming, because Arguello was starting to slip. He was starting to go downhill. He just was. I mean, at 135 pounds, the fact that, you know, he was accomplished in beating Jim Watt and fighting guys at 135, but he wasn't a 135-pound fighter, and that's why they have weight classes, 126, 130, 135 pounds. In other words, by the time he got to 135, he was done. Stick a fork in him, okay? That's just the way it was. I mean, whether he wanted to admit it or not, he had like 70 fights at that point in time when he hit 135 to almost to 140, and he was done. So 135 was the last crescendo, per se, for Alexis Arguello in capturing the World Lightweight Championship. Next up, wow, he takes on, of course, Aaron Pryor. And, of course, we know what happened there. Of course, Aaron Pryor, the first fight, I think the fight was... it was rigged. And why do I say that? When I say rigged, I don't mean like the judges were like, you know, or the referee or somebody was conspiring to get him, or some bookmaker in the back was going, we want this guy to win. No, I don't mean rigged like that. I mean rigged by the fact that Alexis Arguello faced a guy that wrapped his hands in plaster of Paris. Now, what is plaster of Paris? Plaster of Paris is what they make a cast out of. In other words, if you break your arm, you break your wrist, and they put a cast on your arm, they wrap it in paper, in gauze first, and they wrap plaster of Paris around it, and plaster of Paris is wet, but when it dries, it's hard as a cast, hard as a rock, okay? So Panama Lewis, who was working Aaron Pryor's corner for that first fight down there in 1982, I believe, in Miami, Florida, that's what would happen. They wrapped his hands in plaster of Paris, and Panama didn't, it wasn't enough that he wrapped his hands in plaster of Paris pads. Panama had to have all, he was such a creep, the worst guy I've ever met in my life, just about. Anyway, he had to take the padding out of Pryor's gloves too. So he took the padding out of the gloves, made sure that Pryor's hands were like rock hard with cast hand wraps, okay? I kid you not. So when my buddy Logan Hobson saw Aaron Pryor the next day, Aaron Pryor had 1 inch swellings on each hand. All these knuckles were all swollen up to like a half inch to an inch. How can your hands get swollen up in a professional title fight? Not too often if your hands are wrapped right, okay? His hands weren't wrapped right. That's what I'm trying to tell you. And of course, the second fight, when Arguello came for the second fight with Pryor, he was done. I mean, way done. He was emotionally done. And you know, one of the things with Alexis is that he wasn't the most emotionally stable guy in the world. Those of you that have been listening to the show for a long time, remember in 1999 when he came on the air, when he found out his wife was on the air with me, he came on the show and said, Pedro, I want to die. That's what he said. He wanted to die. So Jose Sulaiman, president of the World Boxing Council, father of Mauricio Sulaiman, sent me down to Nicaragua, flew me down there, business class. It was pretty cool. And I went down there and I tried to get Alexis into rehab. So we spent about 10 to 14 days down there trying to get Alexis Arguello into rehab. He wouldn't go. He was in denial, the whole nine yards. So I guess about 4 or 5 months later, on New Year's Eve, 1999 to 2000, he got into a car accident down there in Nicaragua, and the government told him, listen, pal, either you go to rehab or you're going to jail. And Arguello chose rehab. And, of course, Arguello would see me a few months later at the International Boxing Hall of Fame in Canoso, New York, and tell me that I saved his life, that I helped save his life. So I felt really good about that. But then again, that was 1999, you know, and he would die in 2009. And when he died in 2009, it was a bit suspicious. I mean, was he shot in the chest? Was he shot in the... And there's a picture that I just put up on my Facebook page, Pedro Fernandez and Ring Talk, of me and Arguello at his front door. And I think he was shot to death or he died in front of his front door. That's why I thought the picture was significant for that point in time. But a friend of mine who I'm not going to name, who was a Nicaraguan, had this to say as far as the Nicaraguan government, the fact that Arguello, they thought that he shot himself or he didn't shoot himself. I'm going to read this verbatim, but I'm going to leave the actual names out of this. Hey, Pete, so my family, we have different political views on the so-called Sandinistas. We have in our family back home some who still go and gather wood for their stove or go down to the river to bathe. To the wealthiest who have supported whoever is in power to be in the good graces we've seen by politicians. I don't know what that meant. So not sure of how old that picture is, not exactly how many daughters Alexis had, but the following day after he was found dead, he was a mayor of Managua, we know that, he was ready to renounce his party, the Sandinistas, as he had been appointed the rank of mayor by Rosario Murillo. I don't know who that is. Anyway, the president's wife. Alexis was going to expose all the crap in the country. Yeah, that doesn't go too well. Anyway, now at the funeral, one of the daughters and maybe his ex-wife were seen to have a friendly discussion with the first lady like it was a grand event. And people close to Alexis commented on how friendly they all seemed. Even though Alexis had lots of issues on his plate, he was not the type to have shot himself. Yeah, he was. And if he was, and he would have, he wouldn't have shot him. It would have been a bullet to the head. All indications was he had been a struggle with the weapon. Anything goes on. Of course, the news said the Ortegas were involved and the government was involved. Anyway, bottom line is we'll never know. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide at WBC TV.
You're listening to Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez. Brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC. Right here on Sports Byline.
I got to have a clean slate, baby.
Clean slate.
I'm gonna wipe away all my mistakes.
Clean slate.
Yeah. I got to have a clean slate, baby.
Clean slate.
I'm gonna chalk up all the points.
There was always something about Hector that was a lot of fun. You're always happy to see him.
Did you give the dogs names, or did you find out what their names were?
No, I always go as Mush, Mush.
He was hard not to like. But before the night of the fight, we got a call in our hotel. One of his handlers, in great stress, said, you know, you've got to come over here. We'll get him on the phone. He's trying to jump out a window. And he was completely out of his mind, drug-wise. You know, talked him out of it, calmed down, and they got him out of the danger. And then the concern was, how is he going to be fight time?
Hector Macho Camacho!
Tim, this is by far the most dangerous opponent that Camacho has faced.
And the next day, you wouldn't have known anything had happened.
Camacho told me he's going to go right out and jump on him in the first round. Let's see if he does it.
There was domination there.
He threw the punches he wanted to throw, moved the way he wanted to move, and did what he wanted to do.
Oh, solid left uppercut, and down goes Montez. He is in trouble. And it is all over. Macho Camacho.
A startling first-round knockout.
And he showed everything that he could be, the superstar that he could be.
And there is chaos in the ring.
We were grateful for the fact that he had recovered and that the fight went on, but it was a source of great concern to us from that point forward because we knew he was dealing, you know, with the demons.
Wow. We're going to say Hector Camacho getting coked out. No surprise there. I mean, a couple of times I was around him, he was always doing that kind of good stuff. But the bottom line was, you know, Hector was a unique individual. When I say unique, I mean extremely unique. I remember one time when I was fighting with my ex-wife, maybe I've said this before, where I was fighting with my ex-wife. I was fighting with her on the phone. I wanted to talk to my daughter, and she said, I cut the phone off after 3 minutes. I'm calling from Atlantic City. So Hector found out, and Hector says, well, let me call her. And I said, you know, she likes you. You're her favorite fighter, really. So he calls her on the phone, and being the biatch that she is, or was, or still is, or probably was born. Anyway, he goes, hey, hello, is Olga there? And she goes, yeah, this is Olga. He goes, hey, this is Hector. She goes, Hector who? Because she thought it was my best friend, Hector Martinez. He goes, Hector, the Macho Man Camacho. The only time in her life where she didn't say a word. She was like stunned, speechless, didn't say a word. Anyway, bottom line was he jumped all over. But that's what kind of guy he was. I mean, he saw I was having a couple problems with the old lady and being able to talk to my daughter on the phone. So he wanted to get involved. He was a good guy. He was a good guy to be around, except when he was on coke. When he was coked out, he was a bit of a nightmare. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, I televised, what, one or two of his fights. The second fight that I televised, I think it was the finishing of Ray Leonard. Of course, when he beat up on Ray Leonard there in Atlantic City, he beat Ray Leonard almost to death. I mean, Ray came in on one leg. Ray thought, the show must go on. Ray Charles Leonard, Sugar Ray Leonard, going to fight Macho Man Hector Camacho. Mike Aircrew put this together. And they conned Ray Leonard into weighing in the same day. In other words, he hadn't weighed 160 pounds in maybe seven or eight years, right? So he says, okay, we're going to weigh in on the same day. So Mike Akery, the late promoter from Erie, Pennsylvania, he conned Ray Leonard into okaying a same-day weigh-in. So he had to weigh in that morning. Man, he was dead come to fight as far as the weight was concerned. And then, of course, he had that ruptured or torn or injured Achilles tendon, so he couldn't put weight on one leg. The bottom line was Ray was toast for a Macho Man, and Hector lit him up like a White House Christmas tree. There's just no doubt about it. But 79-6 overall, never got stopped. 38 KOs, a champion at 130, 135. He held titles at 140. And, of course, Hector sort of started to fade from being relative about 147 pounds. Of course, he fought Julio Cesar Chavez in 1992. That was when Don King said to me, hey, Pedro, we're having some problems. You think you can do a couple hours of radio today? I said, yeah, not a problem, DK. He goes, I'll give you this. I said, whoa, right on, a little bonus, right? So I go down to do the radio. I'm supposed to do a two-hour show. And then they say to me, we've got some problems with the satellite. I said, so? What does that mean? Well, we can't go anywhere else. We need to stay with you. I said, what do you mean to stay with me? He goes, we need to stay with you. Can you work another hour? So I said, okay, I'll work another hour. 6 hours later, we were six hours and 15 minutes into it, I realized, you know, this is it. My voice just died. It was all over with. But the bottom line was DK was, listen, Don King was a wonder to work around. People don't like him. Of course, he brought us guys like Hector Camacho, and you know, I think he made Camacho bigger than Camacho was, and Camacho really didn't need to be any bigger than he was, but he did. Don King did this with fighters. That's what promoters do. They make you bigger than what you are. And that's why I'm trying to say that Al Haymon is failing miserably with guys like the Charlo brothers. Jermell Charlo, WBC 160-pound champion since 2019, right? Who's he fought? Scott Cuddy? Pedro Fernandez? Maybe, okay? But he hasn't got any names on his resume, and he doesn't want to step up and gamble. In other words, the way you become a great fighter, Ray Leonard told me this. Sugar Ray Leonard told me the difference between great fighters and good fighters is a great fighter is willing to gamble. He's willing to go for it. In other words, when you're up a couple of rounds and you're looking across the ring and I want to get the guy out of there, and then Chris is telling me, don't worry about it, we got this fight won on points. No, I'm not even listening to him, man. I'm going out there trying to finish this up. You want to close the show. You want to close the show. And you close the show on occasion by gambling. You know, I gambled on occasion, got caught, and realize, whoa, maybe this wasn't the right thing to do. But this is what you have to do in order to become in order to exceed your abilities. In other words, to make it above that one mark, you've got to gamble. Not too many fighters willing to gamble. Of course, Camacho wasn't a gambler. He just wasn't. I mean, he was a guy that fought safe for the most part, had his paranoid issues at the end. You know, a lot of that was cocaine induced. I mean, he had such a bad gear. You heard the announcer, Tim Ryan, I think, was talking about his cocaine problems. Tim Ryan was a CBS TV announcer at that point in time, and they were doing Camacho's fight with Gil Clancy. Gil Clancy was the other announcer. So they were televising these fights, and they knew that Camacho had all these problems. Well, we knew Camacho had these problems. We knew Camacho did blow, but maybe not to that extent. Of course, maybe we can play that clip coming back from the next break where Camacho was, of course, he was coming, what was he, going into Mexico? He tried to sneak a kilo of cocaine. I think he was trying to sneak a kilo of cocaine into Mexico. Most guys try to sneak a kilo of cocaine out of Mexico, but he's trying to sneak a kilo of cocaine into Mexico. Hector Camacho, 79-6, never stopped, 38 KOs, of course. May he rest in peace. How did he die? He died like he lived, hard and fast. He got shot in the head. It was terrible. I mean, I saw a picture of the bullet wound, man. Shot him right in the head. Right in the head. I mean, good Lord. And, well, you know, you're not going to live if you get shot in the head. He got shot in the head. He was on life support for a couple of days, and that was about it. Okay, but the Harlem Heckler, that's what I called him, and that's what I nicknamed him. And, you know, I would give these fighters nicknames like the Hispanic Causing Panic. I named Juan Lascano the Hispanic Causing Panic. And Hector Camacho, I called him the Harlem Heckler. And I thought maybe we'd get upset about that. And he called me up one day, and I said, who's this? He goes, it's the Harlem Heckler. I said, right on, Hector. Yeah, Hector Camacho. But may you rest in peace, man. He goes, it all went down in that car in Bayamon, Puerto Rico. It was outside of San Juan, a little city outside of San Juan. We did a fight there one time. In fact, Camacho fought there one time against Jorge Vaca. That was the time when Hector didn't want to come to the fights. He was all coked out in the hotel. And Harold Smith says to me, Pedro, Hector don't want to come. I said, what do you mean he don't want to come? I mean, this isn't a matter of whether you want to or not. He's got to be here. He's the main event. He goes, well, he don't want to come. And if he don't come, you're not getting paid. And that mean I couldn't pay my, I had like, you know, I had to pay child support and all this kind of crazy stuff. Saying to myself, what? Yeah, Pedro, you know that $9,000 you were going to take out of here that you're supposed to take out of here, you're not going to get it unless Camacho shows up to fight. So I didn't know what to do. Got in the car, went back to the hotel, begged Camacho to come. Anyway, bottom line, it was me and Camacho went back and forth verbally. And in the hotel room, he decided he would come down. He would end up fighting Vaca. The fight was stopped in the second round, I believe, with a technical draw or something like that. They headbutted each other. But at the end of the night, Camacho did show up, and I did get paid. So I want to thank him for that, because had he not showed up, I had a trip to Puerto Rico. I was going to Colombia. I was going straight to Colombia out of Puerto Rico. So my flights were all together the whole night. In fact, I remember when the custom guys, they grabbed me on the plane. I was leaving. I was a marked guy, maybe, but I was leaving San Juan, Puerto Rico, and the customs guys stopped the plane. The plane was like, you know, they're going to roll in the back, and they stopped the plane, and they took me off the plane. And I said, do I need to get my bags? Well, not yet. I mean, not yet. What's going on here? Well, I had a little weed in my pants, so I said to myself, maybe these guys are going to jam me up on the weed. No, they weren't jamming me up on the weed. They were jamming me up on the fact I had money. I had cash, and they didn't dig it. Where did you get this cash? You're going to Columbia with $9,000 in cash. Well, I wanted to make sure it was under 10 grand because you didn't want these people messing with you, the government. If you have under 10 grand, they can't mess with you. But guess what? They messed with me anyway. They held the flight up. When I finally got back on the flight, all these people are looking at me like I'm like a horrible man. Because I had to wait like 15 minutes while, you know, these guys are hassling me on the tarmac. I remember telling these guys, either jail me or let me go. I bluffed them, they let me go. What an idiot, saying this in Puerto Rico. I could still be there. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Just what to do till I met you. Now nothing is certain. You offered me fruit from the tree. Just like the story of Adam and Eve. Now more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez. Brought to you by the WBC. The World Boxing Council, right here on Sports Byline.
I thank y'all for tuning in. All the fans around the world, we love y'all.
We get in this car, we're driving. We're heading close to Texas. I said, let's pull over for the night. He goes, no, you just need to close your eyes for a little bit. I'll keep driving. And I'm like, Macho. He goes, I'm okay. I won't go speed. I said, okay. And I fall asleep. I don't know how long I was closed my eyes, but it wasn't long. He taps me on my shoulder. He goes, hey, I need money for the toll. And I'm like, the toll. And I open my eyes and I see the border. We're on the line to the border into Mexico. I'm like, what are you doing? The patrol looks and they wait for us to go into the security check. And I'm like, it's okay, Macho, no problem. I'll take care of this. Let me talk. He goes, yeah, but that's not the problem. I got a little present in the trunk. I got a kilo in the trunk. And I said, okay, Macho, put the top down. It was a convertible, Jack. And I need you to do Macho time right now, right here. He puts the top down. He jumps up out of this car. He jumps onto the hood of this $90,000 Jag. And he stands up and he's screaming, where's Chavez? Everybody went crazy. The Border Patrol comes. Everybody started, Camacho! The Border Patrol guy passes me with a dog. The dog goes crazy. The dog starts barking and scratching. I look in the rearview mirror, and the Border Patrol takes the dog and hits him on the nose. He goes, shut up, that's Camacho!
Being at the border with Hector Camacho. I've been at the border a few times in, with Hector Martinez, not Hector Camacho, but straight up. I remember one time we were coming back from Tijuana, and I had some Pepsis. I had some Pepsis and some beer. And I was bringing back the Pepsi because it was Mexican Pepsi. They didn't have it here. And I was bringing back the beer because it was Mexican beer. They didn't have it here. It was, you know, it's only a couple of bottles of Corona and a couple of bottles of Pepsi. So the lady asked me, where were you born? You know, it's a Caucasian lady. I said to her, San Francisco. She was, what state is that in? I said, what do you need, a geography lesson? You don't know what state that's in? Anyway, she pulled me aside, the strip search, a whole 9 yards. They took my sodas. The bottom line is I learned not to give people a bad time at the border. Now, got a couple emails here before I go to the 140-pound division. Of course, I promised I would expand on that, the junior welterweight division. The fact that 135 pounds is so talented, Gervonta Davis, Ryan Garcia, Davin Haney, and of course, Lomachenko. Those are just four of the studs at 135 pounds, but 140, I think, is just as promising. But I want to bring up, I got some, there's going to be a special night, I think, on Sonny Liston, some television network, and I want to bring up Sonny. Of course, Sonny was 50-4, got stopped three times as a professional. Leotis Martin stopped him, Ali stopped him, and I think he was stopped once early in his career. But, 50-4 as a professional, 39 KOs. You know, Eddie Machen, who fought him, Eddie Machen went 12 rounds with him. Eddie told me that he's a rough guy. He was tough, this and that. But he wasn't the animal that everybody portrayed him to be. He didn't think that Sonny was just the killer that he was, because Eddie was a good boxer, okay, per se. But what Sonny was Sonny was a drunk, a mean drunk. Johnny Taco knew him in St. Louis before they came together. Of course, Johnny Taco was the owner of the Ringside Gym in Las Vegas, a trainer of sorts, but really a gym runner, a gym owner down there in Las Vegas. Of course, he was Liston's last trainer, I believe, Sonny Liston's last trainer. Of course, Davey Pearl was his last manager. Davey Pearl was the bellboy. Davey Pearl was also the referee for the Sugar Ray Leonard Tommy Hearns fight back in 1981, the first fight when they fought 147 pounds. So Davey Pearl was his last manager. Johnny Taco was his last trainer. Of course, Liston was last seen about December 27th, December 28th, and then they found his body like New Year's Eve. He was supposed to go to a party at the Taco Gym. Johnny Taco threw a party at the gym every year, and he was supposed to go to the party. He didn't show up, and they said, you know, it's a little suspicious. Sonny didn't show up, and then the old lady says, you know, Sonny's not around. I can't find Sonny. So they went to the house. They found Sonny in his shorts. Take that back. He wasn't in his shorts. He was naked laying on the bed. They broke into his house because, you know, the house was locked from the inside. Double bolted, all the windows were locked, and he was laying on his bed naked with his underwear down around his ankles. Now, I'm going to try to get you to picture that, because I'm not trying to get you to picture some nude black man and some nude old man with his ankles, but I want you to picture what's going on here, okay? He's got his underwear down around his ankles. What are his underwear doing down around his ankles? He doesn't wear them down there normally. He wears them down there, I guess he puts them down there when he's about to pleasure himself. We'll just put it to you like that. So here's what's up. Sonny is doing his thing, and he gets a stroke or he has a heart attack and he dies. So he came, maybe he didn't come, but he came and went at the same time. That was the theory, okay, that he came and went at the same time. So he either had a stroke, some type of aneurysm or a heart attack, this and that. But they tried to say it was heroin. They tried to say there was heroin in the system. There wasn't a substantial amount of heroin in his system, and there wasn't a lot of marijuana in his system or anything like that. Sonny was a drunk. He was just a mean, mean-ass drunk. He just was. So every time he got drunk, he wanted to pop a cop. He wanted to pop a bartender. Hey, that guy was looking at me funny in the bar. I want to pop him. That's all he did. He went around. He was a bully. He just was a bully. So when he got his just due, of course, and I think he did get his just due. I mean, he died mysteriously, but he died before his time in the minds of many. Of course, he could have been a lot older than he said, because when I looked at his birth certificate, there were like, I think there were two birth certificates. One said he was born like in 29. The other one said he was born like 33. So we don't know exactly when he was born. No doubt about that. There is some doubt as to when he was born. But as far as his age was concerned, he was an old dude. He was an old man fighting Cassius Clay the first time. That's right, he was Cassius Clay. We'll call him Cassius Clay because he hadn't changed his name yet into Muhammad Ali. Now, when they fought the second time, he wanted to be called Muhammad Ali. So at that point in time, and of course, the second fight was canceled once when Ali had a hernia operation. But the second fight did happen. Of course, it was a knockout in one round in Lewiston, Maine, the punch that a lot of people say they didn't see. I saw it. Larry Merchant was there. In fact, if you look at the picture of the knockout of Muhammad Ali standing in the ring here, if you look between his legs, you will see my buddy Larry Merchant standing there. I kid you, with his mouth open, like he was in shock. Larry Merchant between Muhammad Ali's legs in that picture when he knocked out Sonny Liston and Lewiston, Maine. Of course, that was round number one, the Phantom Punch. They had all kinds of different words for it, but the punch connected. And Sonny was an old dude. I mean, Sonny was, like I said, older than he said he was. He was supposed to be like 34, 35. I think he was close to 40, if not more. I kid you not. Anyway, at the end of the day, he was no match for the speed of Muhammad Ali. He was no match for the punches coming. He was no match for the hand or the foot. I mean, he just was no match for him. He wasn't. I mean, he didn't land a telling punch in the entire fight, in both fights. And the only damage that Liston did was in the first fight when he put that Moncel solution, that cut solution, he put it on his gloves, and then he rubbed it in Ali's eyes. Because how do I know he did this on purpose? Because Larry Merchant, of course, he was on here in hour number one of Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. He told me that Liston's other opponents had told him the same thing, that they had come something in their eyes. They couldn't believe it. And it was, you know, they thought it was the Moncel solution. So that's what Liston and his corner did. They did it on purpose. They were cheaters. So they tried to cheat their way to keeping the title because they were getting lit up. I mean, Cassius Clay for that first fight, Ali was just lighting them up. I mean, Liston didn't win any rounds, did he? I don't think so. Did he win any minutes? I don't think so. Did he win any 30-second breaks? I don't know. But the bottom line is he was just being outgunned, outmanned, and dominated, okay? And he knew the second fight was probably not going to be any better. I mean, he came in decent shape. Sonny trained hard. I watched some of the films, and Johnny Taco told me he was in good shape for that. And, you know, for the second Clay fight, I think that's what Johnny Taco, I had to correct him on that one, but the second Clay fight. Anyway, he was in good shape for that one, but good shape wouldn't have made it. He was old. He was slow. He was going up against the greatest heavyweight maybe of all time as far as hand and foot speed were concerned. So he ain't going to make it against him, okay? So he was going to win that fight no matter what. But then Sonny went a few fights. I mean, he never lost again until he lost against Leotis Martin. And of course, he had like 5, maybe 10, 15 fights in between. He beat guys like Henry Clark. He knocked out Henry Clark in the 7th round. I remember Henry Clark. Here's a good Henry Clark story. Henry Clark was the California heavyweight champion at one point in time. He was Muhammad Ali's sparring partner for the George Foreman fight back in 1974. So he got $40,000 in pay from Ali for doing the sparring down there for like, I think they were there for like 4 months or something like that. He got 10 grand a month, something like that. Anyway, so he gets 40 grand. So he decides to invest his entire $40,000 in these ivory canes. In other words, he's going to get these canes that are made out of the tusks of elephants. The elephant tusk, he's getting all these canes made out of ivory. So he buys like a certain amount of canes. So it costs him a lot of money because ivory is expensive, okay? So he buys all these canes and he brings them home and he puts them on top of the luggage above your seat. That little, you know, luggage compartment, puts them in the luggage compartment. So anyway, in the flight from Africa to New York, they cracked in half. Evidently, the plane did a jump, this and that, and the things broke. They broke. So when he opened them up and he realized that they broke, there wasn't ivory that he had been taken, that these were a fraud. He got nothing but glass, 40 grand, 4 months in Africa. Henry Clark got nothing. Anyway, Henry Clark, former California heavyweight champion. I'm promoting boxing at the Longshoremen's Hall in San Francisco, California. It's a union hall down here on Fisherman's Wharf. Holds about 1,500 people. So I'm promoting boxing there with, I can't remember the lady I was working with at that point in time. God, it kills me. I can't remember the name sometimes. So anyway, I give Henry's got a boxing club out there in Hunters Point, in San Francisco, which out in the black area where I used to work as a cop. So I gave him like 15 tickets. Plus I gave him 2 ringside tickets for himself. So I gave him like 17 tickets. So I said to him, Henry, is this cool?
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
So you know, he's a little punchy, this net. So anyway, I'm sitting there in the arena, and all of a sudden I look over and I see one of the exit doors open up in the back. I mean, there was like all these different doors around the arena had different exit doors, and we had like guards on most of the doors, but one door opened up, and all of a sudden, like, I guess about 45 or 50 people came running in like they were fleeing something. They should have been running out, but they were running in because they were like getting free tickets. They're running in. So anyway, I found out that I went to the door, and guess who was holding the door? Henry Clark. I said, hey, Henry, what the hell's going on? Bam! Fired on Henry right there and dropped him. He put his hands up against me. I fired on him first. So I dropped the former California heavyweight champion, dropped him in a heap, told him to get up, told him if he wanted to continue to stay here tonight, we didn't have no more problems, or he was going to have to get ejected. In other words, I was calling the cops. So Henry was cool that night, but I decked Henry, put him on his butt. Bottom line is, Henry was a good guy, but back to Sonny Liston, he was just a bully. Now, the 140-pound weight class, I promise I would get to that. Of course, I think it's topped by Josh Taylor. Of course, the 140-pound champion. I mean, he is the guy without a doubt. You can't say enough about him. I mean, some people think he's from the UK, so you got to sort of dog him because he's from the UK. No. He is the real deal. Of course, he's undefeated, 18 and zip. Comes with us from Haddington, the United Kingdom. Number 2, according to Boxrec, is Regis Progress. Of course, he's been beaten once, 26-1. Jose Zepeda is a hot fighter, I think, at 140, and he is 35-2. Man, this guy can knock people out. Of course, he knocked out that kid from Brooklyn, New York, named Vargas, Jesse Vargas, in one round about a month ago. Jose Carlos Ramirez, a former WBC champion, is comes in at number 4, according to Boxrec. Sandor Martin, who beat Mikey Garcia on a majority decision about a month and a half ago or 2 months ago, man, he beat Mikey Garcia like a girl. He owned Mikey Garcia. That's the majority decision. One judge called it even. That judge should have his ticket pulled. There's no doubt about that. Next up at 140 pounds is Jose Pedraza. He's like 29-3. Rest of the names really don't jump up at me here. Robert Easter, maybe Montana Love, maybe something to go. He's 17-0 with one draw. He's got a little bit of flash to him. Of course, we've got Mario Barrios, of course, at 140 pounds. Now he's at 147. In fact, 147 pounds. Mario Barrios at 147. I thought he was small at 140. I just thought he was small at 140. Why go to 147? You know, if you're already at a size disadvantage, but then again, that's probably where the money's going to be. Speaking of 147, you know, Earl Spence, Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford, undefeated now, 39-0, 34 years old. Who's he beat? He's got a few good names on his record, but there's no Hall of Famers there. How can you be a great fighter and not beat anybody great? Anyway, Mario Barrios, 26-0, with that one stoppage, of course, to Tank Davis. Speaking of Tank Davis, what's he going to do? I mean, he's always talking big talks. I mean, I'm the pay-per-view king, but he only did 100,000 homes on pay-per-view that last time out. Anyway, Keith Thurman is going to come back against Mario Barrios. That's going to go down on pay-per-view, and that's going to be February the 5th. Why are they putting this on pay-per-view? I don't know. I guess Keith Thurman needs some money for weed because Keith Thurman smokes more weed than anybody I know. I mean, he's a guy, that weirdo guy. He goes out into the forest, brings himself a little flute, and smokes some weed and blows the flute. I don't know if he expects a snake to come up or something like that, but the bottom line is, that's a little bit weird to me. And the fact that when he got married, he sort of got settled, he sort of got acclimated to kicking back and living a good life, so I don't think he can ever come back and be hungry again. As far as Mario Barrios beating him, this might be size. 26-1, a junior welterweight, maybe a lightweight, and Mario's going up against a legitimate welterweight in Keith Thurman. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Of course, you can always check out the WBC website, their interactive website at WBCboxing.com.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Thank y'all for tuning in. All the fans around the world, we love y'all.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council, right here on Sports Byline.
Darkest of night with the moon shining bright. There's a set going strong, a lot of things going on. The man of the hour has an air of great power. The dudes have envied him for so long. Oh, super.
So it's July 4th, 2006. I get this new producer. They tell me you can have this new producer tonight. What's his name? Cuddy. Cuddy, really? Cuddy? Paul Cuddy. Scott Cuddy. Something like that. I said, okay. We'll call him the Cut Man. He ended up nicknaming him the Cut Man. Anyway, July 4th, 2006, we do this show. He thought that Ring Talk was a jewelry show. Thought it was about jewelry and about diamonds, that kind of good stuff. So he was blown away when this little brown guy walks in and starts talking boxing, okay? He had no idea. Anyway, we've been together since July 4th, 2006. He's going to retire in a few months, but he's been my partner here since... God, it's been 15 years now, man. He's been just the greatest guy in the world. He's moody as, you know what? He's moody as spit with an eight sometimes, but you deal with it. Because guess what? He's really a good guy, and he's been so beneficial to me, and I want to thank him. Sometimes I scream at him on the air, this and that, throw rocks at his window. There's a window between me and him here in the studio, and I throw stuff at the window, this and that. I throw tantrums here, but he throws tantrums as well. But the bottom line is, without him, the show would not be on the air, so I thank him from the bottom of my heart without a doubt. Scott Cuddy, you are the man of the year. No doubt about that. 2022, you are my guy. Now I want to mention the fact that Bruno Mars. What's Bruno Mars' real name? Guess what? Pete Hernandez. Pete Hernandez. I mean, come on, man. Bruno Mars is Pete Hernandez. I can see why he changed it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm Pedro Fernandez. Until next time, peace, love, and a ton of respect. Don't forget, WBC TV only on Veev TV, and that comes to you on Tuesdays. So next time, peace, love, and a ton of respect. Thank you, Scott Cuddy.